Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Is that war rocket Ajax? To bring back his body?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me, as always, back is Matt Wilson. Matt, how you doing tonight?
I'm back in the saddle.
You're back in action.
That's right. Just like Looney Tunes back in action.
Right, you're just like Looney Tunes back in action. I've always said that about you.
I do star Brendan Fraser. Fraser? Whatever, who cares?
He does. He cares a lot.
He does. I don't mean to belittle star of George of the Jungle, Brendan Fraser.
He seems like a nice young man.
He does. He always, my joke, back when I used to do seasonal movie previews on the International Society of Supervillains website, was that I would always say his character's name was Brendan Fraser, and then in parentheses, his name was Brendan Fraser. Because I think he always plays the same guy. That's a weird way to start this show. We have a good episode for everybody this week. A very good episode. A very good friend of the show. Someone that we had on just recently, but we couldn't get enough of her, so we had to have her back, is Alex DeCampi. And she is our guest this week.
Yes, she is back. And we are going to talk about everything. Literally everything. It's quite an interview, and I think everybody's going to get a kick out of it.
That's right. But before we get to talking with Alex, we've got all our regular business to get out of the way, including something we're not just getting out of the way at all, something we enjoy doing a lot, and that is thanking our newest Patreon supporters.
That's right, Matt. These are people who have gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and thrown in a couple bucks to help us keep the lights on, get some health insurance, and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. I got some today. So thank you all for supporting us. Matt, who do we have? Who's new?
Dan Pinsk.
Oh, thank you, Dan.
David Morris.
Thank you, David.
John Fitzsimons.
Oh, thank you, John.
Not Fitzsimmons. Don't get that twisted. Josh McGregor.
Thank you, Josh.
David Lopez.
Thank you, David.
And Siobhan H.
Thank you, Siobhan.
Who has helped us out on a lot of things in the past. Thank you to everybody who helped us out on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and help us out if you would like. As we mentioned in previous weeks, if we hit our goal of $1,500 every month, then we will start expanding our Every Story Ever specials into 2 hours instead of 1 hour. And we will be doing the Every Story Ever special for July very soon, so keep an eye out for that. Chris, we have thanked people. Now it is time to do checks and wrecks.
Let's do it. So come on and diggity-tack
yourself before you wreck yourself. Chris, you got anything to check in with this week?
Not this week. I have not done a whole lot, Matt.
Well, I had a busy week.
Yeah. I thought I might cede my time to you this time.
As people may have deduced from last week's show, where I was not here, and I very much appreciate Kieran Chiak filling in for me on relatively short notice, because I basically texted Chris Monday night and told him, hey, I can't do the show. I am driving to Shelby, which is where I was born. It is the town of my birth. It is where my parents, my mom, continues to live. And I had to text him and say, I'm not going to be able to do the show this week. As you may have seen on the War Rocket Ajax Tumblr or deduced from the show, my dad passed away on Tuesday night, and I was glad that I got to be there for that. I was at home. My brother and I and my mom were all at home, along with a lot of people who helped us out. The drive to Shelby Monday night was very strange. A thunderstorm had just happened here in my home, where my home now of Asheville, which is about an hour and 15 minutes away from Shelby. And I was driving down the highway going to Shelby, and there were all these clouds in the sky, and there was just these lightning bolts just shooting through the clouds, like sideways and up and across and down and every direction you can imagine. And the sky was just, it was this weird omen almost. It was a portent. It was this crazy scene, and it felt like I was driving to Mount Doom is what I kept telling people. And it was just this, it was like I was in a movie. It was like I was driving for this major life event. This thing that I had been waiting for months, a year really. And had not mentioned it on the show before, because I didn't want to, and I didn't want to bum people out about it, but my dad had been sick for a long time. And so this is this thing that had been building up for such a long time. It's like the sky was there for me, like this weird thing as I was driving. And then I spent the next several days at my parents' house, just staying with my mom and seeing 1,000 people who came to visit and brought food that surprisingly people ate. Like, I really expected the fridge to just be completely full of food that nobody ever ate, but it got eaten somehow. And, you know, just a lot of hanging out there and dealing with all the stuff I had to do. And boy, it's a good thing I got those pants that I talked about on the show months ago, because I needed those. And that's why I was getting those pants, either the new pants that I never found or the pants that I had to get altered. Eventually, I kind of settled back home. I guess it was Friday night. Or no, it was Sunday. It was Sunday when I finally got back home and was able to get the Dick Tracy episode of Movie Fighters up and all that stuff. I've been exhausted. I've been, like, you know, in that weird state that you're in after that kind of thing happens. Weirdly, things have felt pretty normal. It's just been like a collection of certain moments where you're like, oh yeah, you kind of just remember that thing. Like, for instance, I was watching Jeopardy, which is a show my dad really liked to watch. It's my love of game shows, which will oddly enough be discussed in the interview segment that's coming up, kind of came from my dad. My dad watched a lot of game shows. He loved The Price is Right. He watched Jeopardy. He liked a lot of trivia kinds of stuff, but he also liked The Price is Right because my dad loved, he loved haggling. He loved pricing stuff. He carried around a change purse. He was like one of the last people that had those weird leather change purses that spirals around at the top. He carried around one of those as long as I was alive. In fact, we found out, speaking of pricing stuff, we found out as we were going to the graveside service that my dad had gotten his and my mom's plot on sale. That is like the epitome of my dad. Like, he's happy to pay for things at the right price, and he's happy to pay for things whatever they are, but he always kind of would jokingly be like, ooh, that's high, that's steep, as he was pulling out his change purse and paying people. But anyway, he loved watching those game shows, and some of the last conversations I ever had with him were about trying out for the game show that you and I tried out for, Chris, and also trying out for Jeopardy and going on that audition for Jeopardy. And his eyes kind of lit up when I would talk to him about that stuff. And so I kind of had this moment where I was watching Jeopardy and was thinking about, like, maybe I'll be on the show. And he won't see that. But I can kind of at least go beyond Jeopardy in his honor, which puts a whole different spin on the idea of, like, going and being on Jeopardy, which was just something I wanted to do because it's something I've wanted to do for a long time.
Well, listen, if Jeopardy was chopped, you would win.
Yeah, that's right. But now I've got, like, yeah, I've got this, like, energy behind me of like, I'm doing this for my dad. So it's been like a lot of that over the past week of just like having these little moments of being reminded of things, like after the actual funeral and all that stuff happened. It's just been that kind of stuff. And we've gotten lots of very nice messages. I have. And then some things got sent to the War Rocket Ajax Tumblr or the War Rocket Ajax account or just on Twitter. I've gotten so much, just so many nice things have been said to me and people telling me that they, you know, I'm in their thoughts and all that kind of stuff. And it's been that I've greatly appreciated. And I really appreciate everybody who has taken a minute, to tell me that and just give me that little moment of help. That has boosted me up a lot. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird on this episode. Maybe I'll be weird on Ajax for a while, but I'm trying to get back into normal stuff, pretty quickly. And hopefully I have. So that's my entire check. I just kind of wanted to say a few things. And I told a story about my dad picking up Apollo 10 on the Tumblr. If you haven't read it, it might be worth going to read. There are other stories about my dad that maybe I'll tell another time, but that's my check. So Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
My recommendation this week is going to be a television show that you can watch on the internet. It's a very cool new concept.
What a world we live in.
It's the Chris Gethard Show. The Chris Gethard Show, it has been around for a while. If you are like me, also a fan of The Best Show on, well, The Best Show with Tom Sharpling, formerly The Best Show on WFMU, you probably already know about it. But if you're not, basically, comedian, comedy writer, Chris Gethard in 2011 started a show on Manhattan Public Access. And just to give you an idea of the kind of show it is, on the second episode, a woman called up because she was confused as to what exactly the show was about, and he invited her to join the cast. And she did for 15 weeks. It's a talk show, it's a variety show, it's a very weird kind of thing. Earlier this year, I think, Comedy Central ordered a pilot that they didn't pick up, but the show was picked up by Fusion. I do not actually have Fusion, but the good news is, since this is a show that was on public access and that kind of found a very large audience by being streamed and by being released as a video podcast through iTunes, Fusion has decided to not only stream the show as it is recorded for air, but to also just have it available on their website. So you can just search for the Chris Gethard Show and watch it. I think
they may put it on YouTube too. The only other show that I am aware of on Fusion is Know You Shut Up with Paul F. Tompkins and Puppets.
Yes.
And that show is available on YouTube. So it's very possible that the Chris Gethard Show is too.
Yeah, I think there's maybe 8 episodes that are up now. And just to give you an idea, honestly, there's no reason you shouldn't start from the beginning, because each show is organized around a theme, and the theme of the first episode is what's the weirdest thing about your body, and the guests are Abby Jacobson and Alana Glazer in this room full of internet weirdos that have come to see a taping of a show in a basement. But the third episode I watched today, and it is amazing, because the premise of that episode is that it is being recorded with everyone on the show, Chris Gethard, his sidekick, the announcer, the nice young lady who runs the Skype calls so that people can Skype call in, a gentleman named the Human Fish. None of them have slept for at least 36 hours. The guest is Seth Meyers, who is well-rested and wearing a suit. And one of the most amazing things happens on the show, which is that, well, first of all, they do a bit where they write cue cards with the setups for late night monologue jokes, and then Chris Gethard, who has not slept for 36 hours, writes the punchlines, and Seth Meyers reads them as though he is delivering his monologue on late night. The other amazing thing that happens is that by the end of it, Seth Meyers is just sitting there in his suit having a conversation Chris Gethard is like shaking and under a blanket that someone has brought him. He looks like he is about to collapse. It is a really bizarre and bizarrely entertaining show. Highly enjoyable. It's kind of the internet. It's exactly what you would expect from a talk show that kind of comes from the internet. It's very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Matt, what is your recommendation this week?
Well, first of all, let me say, some Harrison the Cat meows might end up in this episode. Just deal with it, everybody. Let me have this and deal with it. I want to kind of set this up a little bit before I get into the actual wreck. It's like a half check, half wreck. I just want to put people in the mindset of where I was when I was watching this. So the past week, like particularly the night before Marlene and I watched this movie, my wife and I, I'd stood in a line and just listened to people walk by me and tell me, "Hey, you look like you're dead. Hey, you look like you're dead. Hey, you look like you're dead." And I would have to tell them all, that's what they tell me. That's what I said every single time. A few people that I liked who would come by and would say, "You look like your dad. It's just amazing how much you look like your dad." I would point out one picture. We made like a little video of a bunch of old pictures of him. And there's one picture of him like sitting in a suit in maybe like 1970 with his leg up. And he's just dressed like I would be dressed. His body language is like me. And he doesn't have his mustache that he had all the rest of his life. And he just like, he's sitting there, and that is the picture that got me. And I was just like, wow, that's the one. But a lot of that day was just, "You look like your dad, that's what they tell me. You look like your dad, that's what they tell me." So I had to like kind of get over that repetition with something. And it just so happened that my mom, who has never had a streaming device in her life, my brother got her a Roku stick just because it was like, all right, you are now going to stream things. Here is a Roku stick. We're going to sign you into our Hulu account. I signed her into my Netflix account, and she's using that now. And so that night we were like, okay, let's watch a movie on Netflix. And we just saw immediately this documentary about the history of General Tso's chicken and how it is not a traditional Chinese dish. I won't give away a lot more than that, but it's sort of a weird invention that Chinese people haven't even heard of for the most part. Like, you ask them what General Tso's chicken is, and they'll go, "I don't know." And then you show them a picture of it, and they're like, "This looks wrong." And General Tso isn't even, like, a widely known figure in China. He's really only known in the Hunan province, which is where he's from. So it's this really interesting kind of historical documentary, but it's also just a really interesting story about Chinese food in America. How it came into being, why there's like a Chinese restaurant in every town. That is by design. And the documentary digs into that a little bit. And then there's like all this really interesting stuff about family tradition and how Chinese food and Chinese restaurants are, you know, there's a lot of like families sitting around talking about like the restaurants and how they think their version of a particular dish is the best. It's a really fascinating movie. There is one guy in it I absolutely hate, who is this guy whose whole deal is he collects Chinese menus, like Chinese restaurant menus. He has like a room full of Chinese restaurant menus. And this is coming from a guy who collects comic books, who has a room full of comic books. And I'm like, that guy's boring and weird. I don't want to hear about his Chinese menu collection. Besides him. The movie is full of like really interesting people talking about really interesting stuff about Chinese history and Chinese food and the history of American Chinese food. So if you have not seen it, go watch The Search for General Tso on Netflix. It is a great watch. It was exactly what I needed to watch that particular night because it was just interesting, and you could like pause it and talk about stuff, and it was really what I needed. So go watch it.
Yeah, and that is exactly the kind of documentary I am 100% into. I've actually heard of this one before, and I want to watch it. So
yeah, I recommend it completely. All right, Chris, let's talk about some of the comics of the week. Let's start with Prez number 2. We didn't talk about number 1 when it came out. I reviewed it for Comics Line, and I liked it a lot, even though I was kind of like, okay, when she's going to be president? Because of number 2, I'm really glad that this series took some time to get through the election stuff. Because the election stuff in the second issue is really fun. Like, the way Corndog Girl ends up getting elected.
You show her some respect. She is President Beth Ross.
She is Corndog Girl on the ballot.
Yes, she is.
But the way that she gets elected is really, really funny. Because what it ends up being is that they have to do a tiebreaker. There aren't enough electoral votes for anybody. So it goes to the House of Representatives. And each state gets one vote in the House of Representatives. And the states are just basically trying to milk the two major party candidates out of every favor they can get out of them. Like new stadiums and naval bases and like all that kind of like lucre that they can get.
Two NASAs is my favorite.
Yeah. One of them wants two NASAs. Yeah. Because of that competition, they end up voting for Beth to try to, as like a weird, like detente kind of strategy. And she ends up winning accidentally. And it's great.
Yeah,
I really like the way that's set up.
It is a genuinely brilliant bit of satire in a book that has had some kind of surprisingly brilliant satire in it already.
And sharp, like sharp current satire. Like there's a part in this issue about global warming, like the effects of global warming by, is it 2024 or 2028?
I think it's further than that. I think it's like 2050.
Oh, okay. I don't remember what year it's actually supposed to be set in, but like there's a really sharp part about the effects of global warming and how people from coastal areas basically came and had to live on reservations
because that are like zoos.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, it is some brutal satire.
Yeah, for real.
And I gotta say, as someone who really loves the original Joe Simon, Jerry Grandinetti Prez, which is itself weirdly brutal satire for, you know, DC Comics in 1974, that this book is following up on that with the exact same kind of, like, you know, venom behind its punches. Like, that's really awesome. And I think Beth is a really great character. I'm going to go ahead and spoil something for this issue that I don't think anyone cares about. But I love that Prez Rickard shows up.
Yes.
And Prez Rickard immediately has a weird, mysterious past. Because in this universe, he was not president. He says, I was almost president.
Yes.
And now he's an old man.
And the issue ends with him saying, the only way someone who is hated, who is the president, can keep from being assassinated is to have someone more hated as the vice president. And he's clearly talking about himself. Yeah. So you really want to know, what did he do to be so hated?
Honestly, everything that I've read from the DCU stuff, YOU,
right,
has been really good. I haven't read all of it, but like all the new stuff that I've read, Black Canary, Prez, we're going to talk about Cyborg in a minute. Those are all comics that I've really, really liked, and I really hope that they get a chance to explore what they're doing. I feel like Prez is the long shot in that. look, We Are Robin, you know, took two issues to kind of get its footing, but it's a Batman family title. It's going to be fine. Like, Black Canary is kind of following up on the success of Batgirl, so it's probably going to be fine. Prez is great, But I feel like, you know, Robin and Batgirl are characters that have a lot more fans than Prez did.
I feel like this has the potential to be the OMAC of DC YOU.
Yeah.
And look, OMAC got 8 issues, and that's not too bad. I would really like Prez to get more than that. I would love to, because we are starting with a two issues that lead up to her getting elected. Like, I really want to see a decent chunk of her as president. Because I feel like that's when we're really going to get into, like, the deep satire. Now, that said, you know, I talked in my review about number one that if there's something lacking from the book, like, the satire is biting and really well done. But I felt like there wasn't necessarily the narrative expediency that I was looking for. That said, this issue wraps up an arc, and it actually kind of weirdly got to me just because of my own personal circumstances. But it wrapped up the arc with you know, Beth and her dad. And gave her, you know, this brand new level of inspiration, like a reason to want to be president. That is a story that entirely takes place over those two issues. You know, sort of knocks out my whole issue with the narrative expediency, because there is a lot of satire to cram into those two issues. That said, I really want to get a long run for this series so that I can see a lot of her as president, because I think there's so much potential.
Exactly. It has been highly enjoyable, both issues, and this one really steps it up. So if you're out there listening to this and you're not reading Prez, don't Thor the Mighty Avenger this one up for everybody, okay? Yeah.
And
get out there and pick it up.
And we've talked about the satire, and I mentioned the part about her dad. Like, in with all the satire, in with all the kind of send-up of Washington, or the political system, there's a way to, like, put in some really heartfelt moments, particularly in this issue. There's the monologue that her dad gives right there as he's eating his banana pudding. That's really, like it's a gut punch. Like, it's really good. So it's not just kind of, like, cynical bashing of the political system. It's there's some real character in there, too.
Yeah, and we should say this. This has art by Ben Caldwell, who is really fantastic, and was written by Mark Russell, who I think I am otherwise completely unfamiliar with.
Prez
is his only credit on Comixology.
I have a book. I have a book right in front of me. It's a top shelf book. That is kind of. It's not a comic, which is probably why it's not on Comixology. But it's called God is Disappointed in You, and it is a religious satire, and it is really funny.
I also have that book, but I have not read it. So, yeah, Mark Russell and Ben Caldwell are doing something that I think is really special with Prez, and it's great to see DC take a chance on it, and it's a great book to read, so check it out.
All right, we said we were going to talk about Cyborg, so let's do it. Cyborg number one came out this week, and I thought it was pretty good. What did you think, Chris?
I liked it a lot. I wrote in the Comics Alliance's sort of, you know, picks of the week things that we write before the books come out, that it seems so weird that Cyborg wasn't given a solo series at the start of the New 52, because he's, you know, he's a founding Justice Leaguer now. Like, he is no longer 18 Titan. And that he, you know, was kind of just standing on the edge of the spotlight for so long. But in a way, I'm not glad that it took them this long, but I am glad to see that it's David F. Walker who's the guy launching it.
Yeah.
If you've been listening to the show, you'll know that I was a huge, huge fan of David F. Walker and Bilquis Evely's Shaft comic that was one of, I would say, the year's biggest surprises for just how great it was. I did not need a Shaft spinoff comic in my life until I read that book, and it was great. And he has a lot of really interesting ideas. He's done a lot of interviews this week. He's talked to a lot of people about Cyborg this week. And I'm really curious to see where this goes. Again, I think this is an issue where there's a lot of setup, but it's an enjoyable kind of setup.
Well, you know, it sets up two threads that don't really converge yet, right? It starts pulling them together by the end, but they're not together quite yet. But they're two really interesting threads. There's one that's taking place on an unnamed alien planet where a group of aliens is investigating this weird technology that they can't identify. And as you might suspect, that ends up kind of tying back to Cyborg somehow. And the other one is about Cyborg going to visit his dad and trying to figure out just what the hell is going on with him. Because he doesn't know.
This is one of the most important things about this book, I think. The big problem that I've had with Cyborg and Justice League isn't, you know, Cyborg being in Justice League. It's that if you're a kid and you really like Teen Titans or Teen Titans Go on Cartoon Network and you go pick up a comic because it's got Cyborg on the cover, you get, you know, the metal parts of his body coming off and he's a weird desiccated corpse in Forever Evil, you know?
Right.
This book, it's not a kid's book, you know? It's not cartoony. It's Ivan Reis is doing the pencils. It's not cartoony. It's obviously presented as a DC Comics, DC Universe superhero title, but it's about a guy who feels ignored by his parents. There's a hook there for kids. There's a hook there that I think, you know, that is relatable for everybody, but that especially I think there is something there for if you're a kid or a teenager that you can kind of get a handle on and relate to. And again, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't always just read, you know, Archie's and Batman Adventures. I was picking up, I distinctly remember that one of my first comics that I was afraid to read when I was a kid was this issue of Flash, where this guy was tied up in barbed wire on the cover. Because people would just give you comics in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned the Superman issue I had where Parasite was killing everybody on the subway and turning them into skeletons.
Yeah.
And so, the Suicide Squad issue with Batman in it.
That's a great comic.
Where he's Amanda Waller's yelling at him and stuff. I had those when I was a kid.
You know, these are comics that are going to get into the hands of kids one way or the other. And it's nice that even though this isn't explicitly directed at them, and that it's being treated as kind of a big deal, you know, it's Cyborg's first ongoing series in 30 years. So having there be something in there that audience that's familiar with him from there, or, you know, the kids who are in their late teens now who watched the first Teen Titans series when it came on Cartoon Network so long ago, that there's something there for people who aren't me and Matt, you know, people who aren't jaded 30-year-old superhero readers.
Well, I think the greatest victory of DC YOU is that somebody finally thought to themselves, we should probably at least build some kind of a bridge to the popular culture where people are introduced to these characters and not make them totally unrecognizable. I think the Starfire series did that, and I think the Cyborg series does it too. And that's good.
Yeah, definitely, definitely worth checking out.
All right, the last issue that we're going to talk about before we talk to Alex DeCampi is Hawkeye number 22. The Matt Fraction, David Aja run finally finishes up.
The one that has come out after All New Hawkeye 1 through 3.
That's right.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. Matt Fraction is a friend of the show, as you know, if you listen at Christmas time. Hawkeye's his best superhero comic, I think. Like, I was trying to think, do I like Hawkeye more than I like that Invincible Iron Man annual? And yeah, I do.
I think it's a close race between Hawkeye and maybe Iron Fist, but he co-wrote Iron Fist.
Yes.
But I think Iron Fist is maybe the only one that comes close.
Yeah, which, again, that's him collaborating with David Aja. Seeing them work together so well on this book has been amazing. It is like they are a team that is unbelievably good, and you know, not even counting how good Annie Wu was on this book, not even counting how good Steve Lieber was on the Sandy benefit issue, not even, you know, Matt Hollingsworth on colors has been amazing. Chris Heliopoulos on letters has been doing phenomenal things in this book. Everyone in this book is like a top of their game storyteller on this book at all times. And this final issue delivers on that in a way that had to be almost impossible. You know, to have everyone who was so highly anticipating this issue, to have this be an issue that was, you know, delayed to the point where its successor has three issues down, which are also very good, by the way. To have it be as good as it is and as sharp as it is and rewarding and just composed so well, and even, you know, end with the cliffhanger that it kind of ends on, the cliffhanger that's really not, is, like, it's really great. Oh, and just heads up, I am currently writing for Marvel Comics, so grain of salt with everything, but yeah, I really like this comic.
All right, that's going to do it for our comics reviews. Now, Chris, it's time for us to talk to our guest, Alex DeCampi.
Well, this should be fun.
Welcome to War Rocket Ajax. Tonight we have beer.
It has been a while since we've done some drinking on the show. Joining us for the program this week, as I am sure everyone knows, is someone who I think might be our fastest turnaround for a second appearance ever. It was not too long ago that she made her first appearance on the show, and you will know her as the writer of Archie versus Predator, No Mercy, Grindhouse, Valentine, and a bunch of other really
fun stuff.
And literally
anything else people will pay me for.
Alex DeCampi, welcome back to the show. It is so good to talk to you again.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be back. You don't know how many people came up to me at various conventions and said, I heard you on War Rocket Ajax. I bought your books. So, woo.
Well, look, that is exactly what we're going for on the show.
Yay.
Like, we have never had anybody in the show where I've been like, oh, and by the way, don't buy this person's comics.
Listen, the Ajax bump is a real phenomenon.
That could be a really epic troll, though.
I mean, listen, it's been tempting.
Names are already springing to mind. Names which shall not be voiced. But, you know, we all have that little list of people who are first up against the wall when the revolution comes.
No, we're friends. Everyone who's been on the show is a friend. I know.
But occasionally one has trolly fantasies, as I do, maybe. I mean, I've just been talking to friends about how when they were a little younger and they wanted to get rich, you know, they wanted a mansion filled with red pandas, or like basically a suburban habit trail where they connected all his friends' houses via great big plastic tubes. And I'm like, well, I basically wanted to be every Roger Moore Bond villain. I wanted a lair in an extinct volcano on a tropical island and an orbital death ray. And they were just like, oh, okay.
So who's your favorite Roger Moore Bond villain?
I mean, obviously it's Blofeld because he's got the cat.
I like how you say obviously, like now I'm not going to contradict that with my favorite.
Which version?
I mean, they're all kind of wonderful.
The version of Blofeld whose face you never see? Or Telly Savalas?
I kind of like the one who you never see.
Okay. The one that he picks up with that helicopter and he tells Bond that he'll buy him a delicatessen?
I don't remember that line.
It's like a swipe at the... Who's the guy who created Spectre? Like, it's like a weird subtweet in movie form about him.
Yes, the actual Spectre. Yes. Oh God. But talking about Spectre, the trailer that's just come out, everybody's saying, oh, well, you know, now they've done Sean Connery Bond, now they're flashing back to Roger Moore Bond, and I'm like, yay, I'm fine with that.
First of all, my favorite Blofeld is in fact Telly Savalas. from On Her Majesty's Secret Service. I do like Donald Pleasance, though. But I feel like Donald Pleasance, there's no universe in which Donald Pleasance presents a threat to James Bond.
This is true. Like, and On Her Majesty's Secret Service is the great unsung Bond film in so many ways.
Yes, like, because you grow up hearing that it's the bad one.
And, like, and oh, yeah, he was. You're like, this is kind of fabulous.
Yeah, this is amazing. I mean, I don't know why 40 minutes of this movie is overdubbed, but other than that, this is great.
Because 70s.
Yes. But my favorite Roger Moore villain is, of course, Scaramanga, the man with the golden gun.
Yes. Who actually had one of. Now I'm about to own myself on Bond. But I think it was Scaramanga who had my absolute favorite Bond quote from the books. Because when I was 12, I for some reason had an entire set of the Ian Fleming Bond books and read them all. I know, it explains so much.
I wasn't going to say that, but I'm glad you heard me think it.
I could see the thought bubble from here. It was like, pop! It was once is chance, twice is coincidence. No, this is Goldfinger. I'm sorry. This is Erno Goldfinger. Once is chance, twice is coincidence, the third time is enemy action.
Yeah, I think Scaramanga's most memorable quote is, knick-knack, Tabasco!
Yes, that's true.
The dude wants his hot sauce.
I just want to take this opportunity to rep for two, for one Blofeld, Charles, mm-hmm. Charles Gray, in Diamonds Are Forever.
Really? I hate that guy. I actually just watched Diamonds Are Forever last night.
He does a great Jimmy Dean impression. Which is my favorite thing in that movie. When he's just sitting on the phone, sounding exactly like Jimmy Dean. Like Jimmy Dean has overdubbed him. And then there's Christopher Walken in what may be the worst Bond movie, A View to a Kill. But Walken is so good.
Walken just exists in the Walken-verse, and he kind of brings a little bit of him wherever he goes, and he, like, there's a padding between him and really the awful films he is so frequently in.
Walken
he's
is
got
really
his own pocket universe.
Walken is really good in that movie, and Grace Jones is really good in that movie, and I feel like Roger Moore is even good in that movie, but that movie
nothing
is garbage.
Else is, I know.
Yeah. That movie's terrible, and so it has the worst...
Grace Jones also has her own little universe she brings with her, you know. Like, those are just two wonderful people, you know, two of the great icons of our era, or at least, of, I guess, the 20th century, probably not the 21st. But
I'm not sure that the filming of A View to a Kill is our era, but you know, sure.
You want to disown it, someone else's era?
Certainly Walken has crossed over into our era. Grace Jones, maybe not so much.
Okay. View to a Kill has the worst say the title of the movie line maybe in cinema history, which is where they dump the guy out of Max Zorin's Zeppelin, which is, again, that's awesome. Grace Jones as Mayday says, "What a view."
... Yes.
And Zorin goes, "Yes, a view to a kill," which is not a thing. Like, that's... You can't say that like it's a phrase, is the problem.
It's like, fetch will never be a thing, dude. Fetch will not. Sorry.
Stop trying to make A View to a Kill happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So Alex DeCampi...
I turned around and said that single line would have made that film good. Was that the... who was the girl in View to a Kill? Was that, like, Dr... That was, what's her name? It's like Dr. Jane Christmas or something like that, wasn't it?
No. Are you thinking of Dr. Christmas Jones? Because that is a Brosnan era.
You're right. Because Dr. Christmas Jones just kind of burned herself into my consciousness. That, and also involving some of the worst lines in history. You know, there was definitely a Christmas comes early joke near the end of the film, and I was just like,
it's I thought Christmas only comes once a year.
Oh, yes.
Which. Look, that, I honest to God, think that is not such a terrible line if the rest of the movie had not been reverse engineered from that.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it would have been hilarious in, like, The Hangover or something, but in a Bond film, it's like, okay.
This is where we officially have gone too far.
Mm.
Like, this is why we need a Bond movie where he murders a man in a bathroom by drowning him in a sink.
Yes.
It was Tanya Roberts was the Bond girl in Beautiful Kill.
Her character name was Stacy Sutton. She was the granddaughter of an oil tycoon.
Wow, this interview is great already.
Thank you, Wikimedia. Yes.
It's what I'm here for.
Awesome. But Stacy Sutton is, I don't know, it just lets you down after years of Xenia on the top and things like that. Pussy galore. Pussy galore is still the best.
That, it's pretty great because, again, no one would have that name. That is not a probable or possible name. Do you have a favorite Bond movie, Alex? Like, all-time favorite?
My favorite Bond movie is actually a Harry Palmer film. And it's the time... Do you know what the Harry Palmer films are? Like, for the audience that probably doesn't know, I'm sure you guys do. At the same time Bond started to be a thing, there was a film called The Ipcress File, which also brought in a style of filmmaking called, like, Dutch, where you basically tilted the camera and shot through things to other things to make it look terribly artistic when you were filming an action movie, and you kind of did it, and it basically made Zack Snyder the filmmaker he is today, but was awesome when it was originally done, but not so much upskirt. And The Ipcress File was the British institution that is the man, the legend, Michael Caine, as this kind of beaten down British, like, MI5 officer. It was kind of the street level Bond. And then Bond became a thing. And so the folks who had the Harry Palmer franchise just made a shit ton of movies starring Michael Caine. And they're kind of famous in the UK and, you know, less known elsewhere, but they were on daytime TV, like local channels, a lot growing up. And I've seen all of them. And my favorite one is the one that Ken Russell of The Devils and other just general crazy sauce directed, called The Billion Dollar Brain. It is the best Roger Moore Bond film. In fact, the best Bond film ever made. It stars Michael Caine and is directed by Ken Russell. And you should just see it because it's just Ken Russell making a spy film. Like, I just go and see it. It's so good. Also crazy because Ken Russell is crazy. And if you haven't seen The Devils, you should probably see that too. Not with children around.
Well, I was going to ask, like, what are your favorite Bond knockoffs? Because, you know, obviously there's your In Like Flint's, your Matt Helm movies starring Dean Martin.
I mean, the Harry Palmer franchise, golly, then we start getting into the range of, like, Naked Weapon. Is, like, can that be considered a Bond, like a Hong Kong Bond knockoff?
This is not our first conversation about Naked Weapon that you and I have had.
I like Naked Weapon.
Look, you should. I am not complaining about the frequency of our conversations about Naked Weapon. That is not a problem I have.
I just rewatched it the last time we were chatting.
So let's bring this back to the fact that you are a writer.
Comic books.
When you're watching. Because I know last time you were here was right when Archie vs. Predator had started. And one of the reasons we are having you back this week is because it has just ended. The final issue came out last week. And we talked a lot about you kind of, you know, watching the Predator movies and, you know, kind of reverse engineering and figuring them out. And I know that there's a ton of dialogue references in Archie vs. Predator that are delightful. I still don't think anything is better than Jughead's response to Reggie saying, "I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus."
Someone had to shoot that line down. Also, like, you know, yes, little Jesse Ventura moment, please, everyone.
It's a perfect Predator reference. It's a perfect Reggie moment. It's a perfect Jughead moment. It's all three. It's
also amazing. The other things we're proud of in this book, we have not one, but two Cosmo the Merry Martian cameos, and we actually get Frank Castle in there too.
We can skip everything else and just talk about that panel where the Punisher shows up, if that's what you want to do. Because I read it today and I was like, oh, yes, this is perfect. Like, this is the best.
When you're talking about reverse engineering stories, it wasn't like the Christmas Comes Only Once a Year line where the whole film and her character and everything was basically probably from a couple of drunk scriptwriters sitting around at 2 a.m. But we were determined, like, Fernando, who unfortunately only encourages me and then takes it further himself, Fernando Ruiz, the penciler, And I were determined to get Cosmo in there, and we were absolutely bound and determined to get Frank in there, but we couldn't really tell anyone we were putting Frank in there because there was my other Dark Horse was fine about it, but we were afraid if we actually said and put in the script and Frank and the Punisher or even Frank Castle that someone at Archie or although Archie had been down with a lot, like Archie had been so supportive, but also Archie don't want to get like cease and desist letters from Marvel and especially Fox, who probably don't own Punisher rights. I don't know who has Punisher right now. Might have had kittens. So we just kind of had to do this stealth thing where it's kind of in the back and there's Veronica with her arm around Frank and Frank's like, beam me up, Scotty. And it would just sort of float through somehow, hopefully.
I was going to ask you, like, was there a conversation where it's like, okay, what percentage of the skull can we show? what percentage of his chest do we need to have covered up by this gun?
And can we even have a gun at all? We didn't get into that much detail. It was kind of like that huddle where you're like, okay, we're going to do this. Let's do this. Fist bump, bum, done. Okay.
Well, there's a few things that I love about that. I mean, obviously I love that he shows up. I love that that means that Archie versus Predator is in Archie meets the Punisher continuity.
Well, I mean, we had to reference Punisher because it was the first great Archie crossover. And this, while the casual listener might listen to the two of us banter and think this thing is nothing but side references, there is actually a plot. And that's actually 99% of what goes on in the book. And then there are a couple side references that, in fact, sometimes turn into like random subtweets. And we'll get into the You're One Ugly Melon Farmer line in a sec. Because that's actually a subtweet about how Die Hard was dubbed for TV release, at least in the UK.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
Yippee-ki-yay, Melon Farmer. Yeah. we had certain things that we felt we really had to touch on to make this a fully rounded artistic statement.
The other thing I love about it is that it's like
it's not shoehorned in at all. It feels really natural. It's just like here's Victoria, here's Veronica's dresser, with her pictures on it.
Yeah, why would she not have all of these photos? But also that Frank Castle clearly stopped and posed for this picture. even though he is scowling, as is his wont, he took the time, and Veronica was really happy to be in a picture with him. It's really delightful.
Can't you see Veronica running up to Frank, going, Frank, can we have a selfie, please? Click!
Betty takes a picture.
Kids, yes. but
I will say,
Veronica's probably kind of hot, and she looks kind of Italian with the dark hair, and Frank is a softie for the dark-haired, dangerous girls, so there you go.
I will say, though, I do want to register a little bit of disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this as someone who loved the book, page one to all the way through to the end, loved mm-hmm. the backup stories, loved all the notes, loved the plot. I love that it comes down to Betty and Veronica, because I think everyone was kind of expecting it to just come down to Archie. But no, Archie is murdered in this issue. Spoiler warning for everyone.
Yes, conclusively.
But I am a little disappointed that the Sugar Plum Fairy and Jingle the Christmas Elf didn't show up, because they are my Archie faves.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Yeah, there are a couple of things that I wanted to have a line in issue 3 when they're going through the school about something spooked Jughead, but I thought about where to put it, like literally just as Brendan hit send and everything went to the printers, and he's like, no, Alex, that's your Arnheim, that's a bridge too far. It wasn't a Christmas story, it was a spring break story, so I would have had trouble shoehorning them in, but maybe we should have done some sort of like BPRD versus Jingle the Christmas Elf backup.
Oh, that would
Babe be... Sapien.
Oh, yeah. Listen. I keep waiting because I talk to Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa every now and then. I'll see him at a convention. I'll run into him. We'll talk about Sabrina or Afterlife with Archie. And every time I'm like, so when's Jingle the Christmas Elf going to show up? Because I bet he has something to say about the zombie apocalypse. I have a very specific list of wants, I guess.
I can tell. I can tell. I came up with a, like, while at San Diego, I came up with the next thing I wanted to do at Archie, which they'll probably say no to. I mean, I think they were, like, they were crazy enough to let me play with the toys once, and I think they're probably going to shut the lid pretty soon and possibly close my fingers in them. I might have been having a drink with Derek Robertson, and I was like, man, I want to do more Archie stuff. And Derek goes, I would love to do Archie stuff.
Oh, that would be amazing.
And Derek and I talked about doing a Reggie series. And immediately we thought of the, like, the worst taglines ever, like Reggie bad to the boner. You know, I mean, like, it's...
I mean, okay. I know two things about that. One, they are doing Chip Zdarsky's Jughead. Like, that is a, like, Chip Zdarsky and Erica Henderson are doing Jughead. That's a thing that's really happening.
I know, and it's two, a wonderful, beautiful thing.
Two, you might, you know, you might think that that Archie versus Predator will be an anomaly, but I can tell you, there were two comics that came out this week that involved Archie characters just being violently dismembered.
Yes, yes, yes. I know, and I thought that was so funny. It's like Archie Predator, Archie Sharknado in the same week.
Yeah, like if you want to see the Riverdale High teens being murdered in extremely bloody ways, this is your week. This is
there you go. All your Christmases are coming at once, as they say in the UK.
I don't think I heard Christmas only comes once a year.
That's going to have to be the name of this episode. But come on, I mean, like, I probably couldn't kill people in it, but I could make so much wrong. Like, Derek and I could make so much wrong happen.
I would absolutely love to see that.
And obviously he gets very, very drunk at one point, and Jingle the Christmas Elf appears to him and lectures him about his behavior. But like, Jingle the Christmas Elf would definitely have something to say about Reggie's behavior.
I mean, look, I think we should all have things to say about Reggie's behavior. He's kind of a scumbag.
I know, but that's what makes him so much fun to write. It's like Archie goes away or something like that, and Reggie decides that he's like, this is that he has like 10 days to make Veronica his, and he's just like going to go all out for it. And meanwhile, Veronica's like, "Game on," and just decides to bring him down in the worst way possible.
Why are you telling this to me and not someone at Archie? Because all the wanting that I have is for this to happen, but I can do nothing about it.
Derek's like, as long as I can do a cover of, like, Reggie sitting there in a chair holding a little tiny dog while Veronica's in a dressing room, like, pretending to look interested, like, I'm sold.
That's classic.
But, like, Reggie would be, like, you know, like texting all his mates, like Chuck and Moose, be like, it's on, I'm starting to get in her pants, yeah, we're going to do it in the dressing room. And, like, Veronica's probably Snapchatting him, like, loser!
look, emojis in dialogue and Veronica on Snapchat, you've got your fingers on the pulse of the youth culture.
Yes.
So, I will say, the last time, when I talked to you a couple weeks ago, I was like, hey, by the time you come back on War Rocket Ajax, I will have sat down with at least a good chunk of Valentine. Because that is a book I've been wanting to check out for a while. And you had a big week this week because Archie versus Predator came out.
Yes.
Valentine number 16?
15 came out. 15 came out. Grindhouse 7 got like Diamond refuses to send it to Canada because apparently Canadians don't really like Bieber.
I did notice you mentioned that.
oops. Yeah, it's basically like Grindhouse. We're going out with a bang, with many bangs, bang, 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 lots of sex. And Diamond decided that it didn't want to get in trouble with Canadian customs and was just not even going to try to get the books across the border. And they're polybagged. Like, you know, you can't, like, your children can't look at them in stores without taking them out of the polybag. They're mailed bagged. Because, ooh, lady sex.
So, well, I was going to talk about Valentine. Let's talk about that.
Talk about Valentine.
What's that like as a creator? Because, I mean, when Sex Criminals was first coming out and it had the big, blow up with the Apple Store and everything.
We may not be on Apple Store for the same reason. I mean, it's all technically R, but really not R, actually. We took the R rating rules and followed them to the letter, but ignored the spirit of them, as it were. I mean, I don't mind. Frankly, it'll probably sell more books. A little controversy never hurt.
So what was the, like, did you just get a call from your editor being like, hey, guess what, you're banned in Canada?
Pretty much. It was just like, yeah, well, we finally did it.
check it off the list.
At least the CBLDF didn't have to spend their money on us. We were so sure at some point we were going to get banned in some, like, dry southern county. I'm okay with it. Like, everyone involved knew this book was going to be a bit of a thing because it is quite explicit. Dark Horse had about 3 meetings about it because, like, violent body horror is fine at Dark Horse and at most other publishers. Explicit sex? Very uncomfortable. Like, stick to violence, kids. Stick to violence.
Archie versus Predator, you have Dilton's skull. Like, you literally have the Predator eat the flesh off of Dilton's skull. And well, I think everybody's fine with that.
Well, that's me sitting there watching the Predator films going, so they have the skull and the spinal column as a trophy, but like, how do they get the face off the skull? I mean, obviously they just bite it off and yank. I mean, clearly. But I don't think that ever happened in a Predator film, and that was me kind of filling in some Predator continuity gaps that I saw, and also gratuitous face ripping.
I like that. That's the Predator problem that you wanted to address. Like, I need to be the one who explains where the skin goes.
Well, I don't think I can't see the Predator really sitting down there and like pulling out a pocket knife and being like, peel like a grapefruit, peel the skin off. I think he's a little bit more, they tend to be a little bit more rapid than that.
I don't know, like, I feel like that could be, if you're a Predator, that could be very soothing. Like, that could be your knitting.
Yeah, your ritual thing, like just peeling it off. Like, seeing if you can get all off in one strip, like an orange peel.
Big week, then, I think, is the message.
Hope nobody's eating while listening to this.
You killed Archie.
Yes.
You killed Archie and everyone in Riverdale except Betty and Veronica. You were banned in Canada.
Yes.
And Valentine.
And Valentine. Came out. So let's talk about Valentine.
Yeah. So I went back and I read, I think, the first 6... I think so. I'm kind of just really getting into the meat of the story with it. And when did Valentine start?
2009. We've been doing it very slowly. We had to take a couple of years off because I lost my job. And then I didn't have any money to pay Christine to draw it. And I like paying her because that means she can pay her rent. And then both Christine and I have had some things going on that just meant that things were slow. I mean, Thrillbent picked it up because it was actually one of the comics that inspired Thrillbent, which is cool. And in some ways, its format inspired a lot of other digital comics, like the Marvel Infinite stuff and the DC stuff, none of which I've been hired to do. Yay, comics. So yeah, we're just slow. Like we're gonna get like an episode out every 4 to 6 months, and I'm not sorry about that. And it'll probably, I know the story ends around episode 22, and we've got up to 15 out now, so we're kind of in the home stretch. It gets super violent from here on in, and actually, there's a major left turn in the next few episodes from 6.
Yeah, and the first issue is actually free on Comixology. So anyone who has enjoyed hearing you on this show, has enjoyed reading Archie versus Predator, can go check that out.
And the other episodes are 99 cents each, and they're fairly long. So like, you feel like you're getting essentially an issue, a comic issue's worth of entertainment for your 99 centavos. And it's the nice thing about Valentine is it's. Essentially, it's not pages, it's completely digital native, so basically you can read it on your phone really easily. It's a good thing to download onto your phone and read, like, between, like, on smoke breaks at work or on the subway or, like, well, whatever you have little bits
listen,
of time every day.
War Rocket Ajax does not endorse in smoking at all. We're like Marvel Comics. We will slap the cigar out of Wolverine's mouth. But okay. We do endorse taking breaks to read comics.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So, yeah, sorry. No, don't smoke because, yeah, no, my father passed away from cancer involving that probably originated from being a smoker. It wasn't lung cancer. It was pancreatic cancer. And I can tell you that you really don't want to die from cancer because I've watched it happen twice now. There's no cool way to go, but cancer is a pretty shitty way. Like, it's pretty not fun way to die. So,
this has been a great interview. We've covered a lot of topics.
Dead people. Let's talk about dead people. But yeah, Valentine's a fantasy. Cheerful things. Valentine's like a fantasy thriller. It's very, very easy to read on your phone or a tablet. The art's quite lovely, and you will have no idea where it's headed. It just keeps making crazy turns that you hopefully won't see.
Yeah, and I gotta say, like, if you and Christine Larson started this in 2009, that's pre-iPad. That's really pre-comiXology, right?
Yeah, I mean, comiXology always rolls me out at its panels, me and Riley Brown, to talk about, like, basically originating digital native comics.
So, I can't...
When comiXology was launched, essentially.
I can't imagine, like, making that leap without... Like, I could not have... I mean, look, I am currently writing one of the Marvel Infinite comics, and to be honest...
I'm the only motherfucker in the world who hasn't written one of those. And I, like, pretty much helped define the digital format form.
Like, I feel like you're angry at me right now.
No, I'm sorry. It's just one of these things. It's like, come on, guys. It's weird when you see something that, like, that you originated and were really and did as, like, a broke pregnant girl in the Bronx with your broke pregnant friend in Philadelphia, and everyone's like, "Wow, this is so amazing!" And then they hire their friends to copy it, and it's like, "Oh, really? We can do it."
I would love to see you do more, because, like I was saying, I can't imagine being the one who figured out how to do it. But that first issue of Valentine, you know, you do it right from the start with the big kind of long sweeping panel of the big panorama panel. What was like?
And I didn't even have a smartphone, and I just had to imagine it. I had to, like, picture it in my head how it would look. All I had was the same MacBook Pro I have because yay the tall comics dollar. And I only got a smartphone. I only got my first iPhone in like 2011. So the first 8 episodes or so were just me imagining what it would be in my mind and doing it that way.
That is amazing to me. That is, I mean, look, not only is it a really compelling story with beautiful art, I absolutely love the art, but that you sat down and just did it is mind boggling to me.
And we got, you know, we had that for free on comiXology, and we got like 300,000 downloads. I mean, yeah, make your stuff free, everyone downloads it. So I figured I didn't have any money for marketing. So I could either like charge money for it and then like pay someone to market it, or I could just make it free and then hopefully lots of people would download it and then like people would hire me to do comics. And one of those things happened. And then Thrillbent came along, you know, a couple of years later and said, "Hey, do you ever want to finish this?" And I was like, "Hell yeah." And they support us to finish it, which is lovely of them. So Mark Waid, John Rogers, best people in the world.
Everybody who's listening to this, if you have not already read Valentine, it's $14.85 to get, no, it's less than that. It's because the first one's free.
Yeah.
It's $13.86.
Yeah.
So go and buy all of those right now. They are highly, highly enjoyable. And when you consider that they started that long ago, it's going to blow your mind. So definitely check those out, everybody.
With that, I think it's time for us to move on to Twitter questions, Chris.
Yay, Twitter questions.
Oh, it feels like we're just getting started. But if our listeners want to get in on asking our guests some questions, Matt, how can they go about that?
Well, Mr. Bond.
Can we ask listeners questions? Listeners, answer this. Do you feel that 10 years ago that like you'd be in a different place than you are now? Do you regret some of your life choices?
Well, I was gonna do a little James Bond bit there, but I'm gonna drop that and let the asking the listener questions bit stand in for it because that's better. But if people want to ask questions of us while we ask questions of them, they can go to twitter.com and follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris. And wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific, and that will be the moment that they can ask questions of our guest, because we're going to put out the call for questions at about that time. And the questions will be very similar to the ones we're about to ask. For example, the first one I have is from Doubting Tom. This could become a regular question on the show. Doubting Tom wants to know, this is for everybody, what is your favorite game on The Price is Right?
Oh, good Lord. I've lived outside the U.S. most of my life. I haven't watched The Price is Right in years. This is by plea for an ignorance.
Well, Alex, what happens is that it's a game of pricing games where they'll ask you the prices of common or sometimes uncommon objects in various bizarre forms.
I've watched it when I was like 10 years old. I don't remember it very well at all. So, alas, I'm going to have to take a pass on this one. You guys can answer if you want.
You could just say Plinko.
Yeah, like, because it's Plinko. Like, that's my answer. Because Plinko is great, and everybody loses their shit when that Plinko board comes out.
Okay, Plinko.
I always thought Plinko had, like, the lame prize of just cash, though. I always wanted it to be a better prize than just cash.
But you don't want it to be like the prize of like the deluxe, you know, treadmill for the person in a wheelchair.
That's true. I actually I like a retired game that they don't do anymore because I just think it had the coolest setup. It looked like kind of like an old arcade game. It was called Penny Ante. And you hit a little button, and it made a bunch of pennies light up, and it let you know if you were right or not. But they had to retire that game because the machine broke; they can't use it anymore.
Those machines, I think, were made by master craftsmen.
Yes,
Matt, what are your feelings on Punch a Bunch?
I hate it.
Really?
There are a lot of. Well, I like the game itself, but I hate the prizes. Because it's just like, it's like a weird casino game. I hate the ones that are casino games. Like you roll the dice or you play some cards. I'm a bit of a game show connoisseur, everybody.
Yeah, you are a bit of a, I would call it a game show nerd.
When I was 3 years old, I wanted to be a game show host.
This, still an achievable goal, my friend.
This question is from our pal Ben Gully on Twitter, Franz Ferdinand 2. He asks you, Alex, have you ever come up with something that you wanted to do to a comics character that even you thought was too brutal in the end?
Nope.
All right, simple enough. All right, the next question we have is from Eucrid on Twitter. He wants to know, do Alex DeCampi and Carla Speed McNeil argue over which of them has the coolest name in the world?
It's definitely Speedy. I succeed rights with cool naming. Actually, but there's also a music video director and filmmaker named Autumn De Winter, and I actually think she might have the coolest name in the world.
Now, is that Winter with an I or Winter with a Y?
I think it's Winter with an I. Which brings an uncomfortable frisson of Sean Connery's bad guy in the dreadful Uma Thurman Avengers remake, not those Avengers, the other Avengers. But I think she passes, and she's also a really good director. But well, you know, Speedy gets it.
Well, you know, Alex, winter only comes 3 months out of the year. The noir guy.
I was going to say that Autumn to Winter. Needs to find spring to summer.
That's true. Joshua Daniel, the noir guy on Twitter, wants to know, when is Lady Danger Agent of Booty coming back.
I would love to do a Lady Danger miniseries. I have two things sitting in casting at Dark Horse right now, and like Grindhouse is ending with Nebulina, with my space exploitation tale banned in Canada, undistributed by Diamond in Canada because they're a bunch of lily-livered comics distributors. It's ending not because Dark Horse told me to. I just need a break because I have a whole bunch of things on right now. Unfortunately, none of them are actually announced yet. I'm working my ass off like on so many things, and it's like, I have all this stuff. Honest, it's coming. Someone will mention it soon, but not now because it's not through casting, or it's not, we don't have, like, we tend to get like about three issues done of something before we announce it. We're not there yet for various reasons. For a couple of very, very well-known artists that I'm working with. It's just because it's sort of, you know, in an Arlo Guthrie sense, hasn't quite come around on the guitar yet. They're kind of finishing up other things that they're going to start with me. Lots of exciting stuff. None of it in public yet. So I'm taking a break from Grindhouse. I want it to come back. Dark Horse wants it to come back. It's profitable. You know, it's a profitable creator-owned series. This is manna from heaven. And we're going to do annuals, probably, maybe. I keep trying to convince Dan Brown at Creepy that he should let me guest edit an exploitation issue of Creepy. He's close to agreeing, maybe. Go, Dan. Of all the stories, I think Lady Danger is the one I want to bring back as like a mini-series with Afua Richardson doing the covers and Mulele Jarvis continuing on the interior art because he's awesome. For the readers that don't know, Lady Danger was... the listeners, sorry. Can't read radio. It was issues 5 and 6 of the current Grindhouse arc. It's the most recent completed arc. It's still on most stands. And it's a blaxploitation tale about essentially a black superheroine with her own pink and gold jet who works for an agency called Booty, which is the Bureau of Organized Terrorism Intervention. So if you... If you are American and in danger abroad, the president no longer sends in the Marines. He sends in one black girl. And that is Lady Danger. And it's just like, it's so full of awesome things. It just makes me happy only thinking about it. And I want to bring it back, but it will be probably next year at the earliest.
We have time for two more questions. This one is from our friend of the show, L. Collins, another L, host of the Intuit podcast. This question is, aside from Predator and zombies, what monster would each of you like to see the Archies face?
I mean, Archies versus Jason is so obvious, but it would feel redundant after Archie Predator. I still think, not necessarily a monster, although the city is a monster, Escape from Riverdale should be a thing.
My answer is the most obvious answer possible, which is Dracula.
That's probably going to happen in Sabrina anyway.
Yeah, I mean, like that it hasn't happened yet is ridiculous. Archie's been around for 75 years.
This is true, and I can see Betty and Veronica becoming like Dracula's maidens very easily.
Like, look, it writes itself.
I've already written it, folks.
I think
Archie RoboCop would be quite a lot of fun too. I mean, ED-209, although not technically a monster, you know.
I think they're already probably reaching toward this as well, but getting Archie on some Lovecraft shit would be pretty good too.
I mean, that is happening in Sabrina.
Afterlife. Yeah, like the Dunwich horror, but Riverdale. Kind of thing would be pretty cool. All right, our last question is from Arthur Wyatt. And he's asking about a series that we haven't really talked about that much, No Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
He asks, those poor kids are going to be okay, aren't they?
No.
He may be asking
as
about...
As I stroke my white Persian cat. Yeah,
he may be asking about Archie, but I think the answer no matter what is no.
No.
In every
kids,
case.
The kids are never all right. Although I do love, like, for those who have read Archie versus Predator, you'll understand this. I do love if there is something, I believe in something called super continuity, which means if something happens in fiction or reality, it's in continuity with everything else that's happened in fiction and reality. So at the end of Archie versus Predator, the Archie that I'm leaving you with is frankly the Archie you all deserve.
And punctuated with the clanging of a beer bottle. our guest,
beautiful orchestral strain.
Our guest has been Alex DeCampi on War Rocket Ajax this week. Alex, thank you for coming on the show. Before we let you go, please tell all our listeners where they can find you on the internet.
I do have the second or possibly third most awesome name in the universe, and therefore you can always find me on Alex DeCampi on Tumblr, on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Tar Interwebs. And if you want to order my books and you are not near a comic store, if you go to www.tfaw.com/AlexDeCampi, they will mail them to you in the U.S. And if you're in the U.K., page45.com has your back as always.
Alex DeCampi, thank you so much. We need to have you back, but probably not for a little while. But look, any time.
We need to have like a side episode that's just like Alex, Matt, and Chris talk about shit.
We'll add a Patreon goal, and yeah, then we'll to add you as permanent third chair.
I think we could pretty definitely talk about James Bond a lot more. So.
Oh yes, I might have to go back and rewatch some films because I frankly felt slightly owned on a couple of things because I haven't seen many of them in quite some time. But you really should all go watch The Billion Dollar Brain.
Thanks once again to Alex DeCampi. Patreon goal. New show, new set of bonus episodes where we just hang out. Think about it, everybody. We'll put it on there if you want. Now is the time of the show where we like to answer some questions of our own that listeners send in. So what do we have in our bi-weekly listener question segment?
Well, the first question I have is from Kishatron. I believe that's how you say it. And this is something we've addressed maybe indirectly, but this is directly asking the question. Why can Chris read scary comics but not watch scary movies?
I don't like scary comics.
No, you read like, Afterlife with Archie and stuff.
Afterlife with Archie's not scary. I don't know. I guess I do. There are some scary comics that I read. Like, I read... I've talked about before how I like the Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service. I like Mail. But a lot of what you would call, horror comics, are either just not my thing. Like, I think I'm the only person in comics who doesn't actually like the EC horror comics. Like, I mean, they're beautiful. Like, I get it. Okay. Like, you don't have to write in. I get it. But it's like they're just, I do not enjoy reading them. Or they're like horror comics that I don't consider to be scary. Like Hellboy has never been scary. Like, because it's got like dark, creepy imagery and a monster who punches things. That's the kind of thing I can get into. I don't think I read a lot of what you would call like scary comics. Like the scary stuff in comics is always kind of filtered through superheroes for me.
Well, Let me ask you this.
Yes.
If they made a movie adaptation of Afterlife with Archie, could you watch it?
Probably.
Okay.
I would say probably.
If I was going to posit a theory about why you maybe approach comics with horror content differently from movies, is that comics at least give you a measure of control. You can close a comic and put it down. I mean, you could turn off a movie in the middle of watching it, I guess. But you control the pacing of the story. You control turning the pages. In a movie, you're sort of at the whim of the director or the editor. And that suspense is going to build at in the time frame that they want. Whereas if you're reading a comic, you can just flip straight ahead to the next page if you want to get away from a thing that you're looking at.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think that's part of it. I think, I mean, look, I don't want to get like too into this, but I think the situations where I am not in control are very scary to me in general. I think that's one of the reasons I don't like flying. And one of the reasons I am a way worse passenger than I am a driver. When, like, I don't like driving on highways, but, like, I hate being a passenger on highways. I hate it. I hate it so much. So, yeah, I think you're right about that. Because a movie, you know, watching a movie is a very passive experience. And I think reading a comic is a really active one. For that exact reason. So maybe that's it. But, yeah, I don't really consider myself to have read a lot of what you would call horror comics. So I don't know. I guess, like, I like Swamp Thing a lot. And the Alan Moore Swamp Thing is, you know, the Alan Moore, Steve Bissett, John Tottleman Swamp Thing is certainly a horror comic, you know? But again, I think I look at it as a superhero thing more than a horror thing. Whereas there's, you know, I cannot divorce, like, slasher movies from superheroes in my head. I think that's one of the reasons I actually like Hackslash a lot. Because, you know, it has the slasher movie elements and monsters, but it reads to me like a superhero story. So, I don't know. That's a good question.
All right, one more question and then we'll wrap up. And this is kind of just a yes or no. Have you ever read X-Men Star Trek? It's weird, but when I see the... This is an anonymous questioner, by the way. It's weird, but when I see the panels of Gladiator punching the Enterprise, I think that's something Chris would love.
I have read those, but it was a long time ago. I was a teenager when I read those. The you know, the panel that I think everybody remembers is the one where someone says, Dr. McCoy and Beast and Bones both go, yes? Ha-ha! They're both named Dr. McCoy. You get it?
It's pretty good.
So yeah, I have read that. It's fun.
Yeah, I read it a very long time
ago. Those weird 90s crossovers are weird.
They are super weird. Wasn't there more than one X-Men Star Trek crossover?
There were two. Because there was an original series and a Star Trek The Next Generation.
There was a Next Generation one too. I thought so.
Yeah.
Weird. Weird that those exist. Okay.
Yeah.
That's our question segment. If you would like if you would like to send us a question, you can do so on Tumblr at warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also email it to us at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send us Word Heavyweight Champions lists and Every Story Ever lists. The Every Story Ever special for July is coming in the very near future. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Also, check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, that is where you will find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review. The more positive reviews we get, the more we are featured on iTunes. And now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson. And you will find links to all my stuff. Chris, where can everybody find your stuff?
Everybody can find links to everything I do at about.me/ChrisSims. There's links there to my Comixology page, where you can get the latest issue of X-Men 92, number 5. Chapter 5 of the digital version came out this week. If you picked it up, thank you. If you haven't picked it up, go pick it up. X-Force is in it. It's, like, really good. There's some good stuff in this one. And that does it for War Rocket Ajax number 264. Thanks once again to Kieran Shiak for filling in last week. Definitely check out Journey into Misery and support his stuff. Matt, I am glad to have you back.
I'm glad to be back. And I will be back next week.
And we'll talk to you all then.
Yeah! Flash.
We can can go long if you want. I mean, I'm here and have more beer.
No, we can't.
Okay. if people want
Editor
to
Matt
get...
says, yeah.